Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello, hello everybody. Thank you so much for joining me and my wonderful guest today. It's a big day. It is, it's my 49th birthday today. Yay! Oh, wait. See, now here's the beauty of having your own radio show. Ready? Okay, it's my 49th birthday today. People do you know get applauded on their 49th birthday? Well, you know, when you do your own radio show, you can do those kind of things. So anyways, I am super, super excited to be here. There is so much to share. And you know what? I'm going to kind of just get right into it. My guest, Patricia, just being me, the beautiful Patricia, just being me, Farrington, is with us. I just want to share some stuff that I've been going through, because it's pretty major, and it's going to kind of set the tone for where we're going to go for the rest of the show. So so those of you who follow me on Facebook, which is most of you guys, you know that recently I had a session with George, but it's funny, the shift didn't come from my session with George. It actually came from one of the interviews he did. He did like 4 interviews recently. And the one where he did it with the 2 women, focusing on one point of view, he said the word candida. And I swear to goodness, that word went through my veins, my cells, my energy. I was sitting at my computer when I was listening to it. I looked it up. And, I mean, lo and behold, it was pretty obvious to me, I have candida. And what is so very interesting that I am definitely coming to realize, now I've had candida easily for the last 2 years, but in all honesty, I have been very immature in my diet. I'm 49 years old today, and I can tell you pretty much since my easily 30, I would eat whatever the hell I wanted to eat, and I'm telling you, I was a child. I ate cookies and cakes and, you know, 3 heaping sugars of sugar in my tea or coffee or iced tea, whatever. But here's what's so interesting about what I've done recently, which is essentially eliminate sugar and carbs. And when I say eliminate, I've eliminated all sugars from the content of, I don't eat cookies or any of the cakes and candies. All that's been eliminated. I don't put it in my tea anymore. Now, there is definitely still sugar in my diet, because it's in, I eat fruit and I eat certain things like, I put flavors on my chicken wraps, and there'll be Szechuan flavors and sweet and sour flavors. And there's sugar in those. So I am not completely sugar-free, but I am significantly less sugar in my diet. And one of the things that has really become apparent to me is, first and foremost, sugar is a drug manufactured by the powers that be to absolutely inhibit us from being emotional. And, I know this by one simple way. Since letting it go, and essentially I went cold turkey, George mentioned candida. The following day, I just stopped, you know, and stopped my normal diet of all the crap, and just started beginning eating, you know, vegetables, fruits, nothing processed. Everything is basically, I guess there's some processing because I have some sauces and stuff that I use, but significantly less processed food in my life as well. And what started happening is I was crying. Last week I was crying insatiably. I just could not cry. I could not stop crying. But what I want to share is that I was crying, but I in no way, shape, or form felt depressed, sad. I mean, it almost felt like it was like a volcanic eruption of tears that I think on some level have waited a lifetime to be expressed. I didn't even know they were in there, but I was like, cry. I mean, I was crying everywhere, crying in the car, crying in my bed, crying at work, crying in front of Scott, crying in front of my dad. I was crying everywhere, and it was cathartic. It was an incredible release that I really just got that whatever the dynamic of the sugar is, it's like it just caps us. It caps that tube of release. So I wanted to share that with you because there's so much shifting going on. And the other thing that I really got today in the pool, which I really want to share, and as soon as I'm done sharing this part, I want to bring Patricia in because God bless, her wisdom and her insight has been, you know, incredibly helpful to me on my own journey, and I want to get her feel on this, is that I'm beginning to understand addictions as relationships. And the reason why I say this is it's starting to become very apparent to me how my soul has prepared me for the shifting in my relationships that I'm going through right now. Because in the past, I would say, I'll go for the past 5 years, I have, unbeknownst to me, I was mastering certain elements in relating with others. And part of the mastering of it was I understand what quantum entanglement is, and in a nutshell, that is essentially when I focus my attention on anything or anyone, part of what happens to me is I am completely empathic to that, what I'm focusing on. This has been my entire life, and it used to be a curse because I would be feeling everybody else's shit and take it as my own. But in my learning to master it, what I do is I recognize, you know, if I focus my attention on somebody, let's just use people for now, if I focus my attention on them, I experience what they experience. And the truth is I've also learned to untangle from people. So I don't have a fear if all of a sudden I'm in a relationship and I'm having money issues or I'm becoming submissive. These are aspects and qualities that I'm okay to dance with, to quote-unquote relate to, because the truth is I'm not locked into it. I know it's me having the experience. You know, I'm not delusional. But I really do know if I want to go on blackout, which is the people that have been in my life know what a blackout is, essentially I unentangle from somebody, focusing my attention on them. And between not focusing my attention on somebody and coupling that with going into Mother Nature, I once again establish my own sense of self, which I'm very confident in my own sense of self, but, you know, let's be honest, we're here to go on an adventure. This is what this whole journey is about, being on an adventure. I love choosing people to quantumly entangle with, experience them, go see how it affects me. And it's not all negative, not by any stretch. There's wonderful aspects to it, and there's, you know, demonic aspects to it. And I truly believe, of course, what's also available to the people and objects and animals that I quantumly entangle with is they get my energy as well and my presence and my demons. You know, I believe this is happening to all of us, and for whatever the reason, in this lifetime, it's very natural to me. I do have the understanding of it, and it excites me to have these relationships. So now to bring it full circle, what I'm also understanding is the addictions also have essences. And it's about understanding the essence of sugar, which me and George spoke about. And it, the essence of sugar is an absolute connection to the artificial light, where now that I don't have that quote-unquote, that zap of the sugar high, well, the connection that I'm making because I'm not ingesting the sugar is the soul connection with Mother Earth. And it's definitely more peaceful, more, I'm going to call it, for me at the moment, it's more seductive than the sugar has been, because it's not an artificial buzz. It's a very stabilizing, grounding frequency. Now, please help me welcome the amazing and beautiful Patricia Farrington to the show. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you. Thank you. I love about your show too. I get the applause.
Exactly. So, please, what are you feeling about that?
Well, the last thing that you said, I mean, you said a lot, but the last thing that you said about your soul connection to Mother Earth really hit me, because the weather here has been up and down like it has all over the planet. And I really hadn't had an opportunity to go out and really connect with Mother Earth in a long time. And we had some beautiful weather this past week, and I was able to go sit out on my deck, sun gaze, connect with Mother Earth. I took the earthen bands that I had, and I actually used my grounding rod, and I just really wanted to go out and communicate with her and connect with her. And this was the first time that I had experienced this particular interaction with her. So where I had all these intentions that, you know, in my mind of what I was going to do. And as soon as I went out and started connecting with her, it was truly like being in the arms of your mother as a baby. I could not keep my eyes open. Mm-hmm. I got so relaxed and so calm. And I had told David, I said, I was so excited to be out grounding. I had all these goals of what I was going to accomplish for the day. And basically, it was just like I went out and she was just holding me.
Right on.
And
right
I was
on.
So, yeah, and it was such a beautiful connection. And I was like, I could not, it was just like I was soothed. It was like you've given me my baby formula, you've burped me, you got me wrapped in my blanket, and I'm good. So,
yeah,
I mean.
Well, yeah, no. In my humble opinion, like I've been noticing my own timeline and how, you know, I've talked about letting go of sugar, 5 years ago I was talking about it, and, you know, 2 years ago, and what I'm truly finding from a soul perspective is that, you know, and we talked about this privately, how ideas come into our minds, you know, they come into our head as a concept of, you know, we'll just use the concept. Okay, it became clear to me that sugar was not good for me. You know, I mean, but, you know, between all the propaganda that's shared, you know, from a medical standpoint and what's healthy and what's not, just like when I quit the cocaine, you know, 20 years ago, until I understood and was ready to understand what the sugar was, what that role was in that relationship, you know, the truth is, nobody was going to tell me, you know, everybody could be quitting sugar around me. I wasn't going to quit it. And of course, the candida consistently became worse. I mean, I am riddled with candida, and the letting go of sugar now, I mean, there are times where I can physically feel it receding. You know, I mean, I can feel it dying inside me. But my point of what I'm saying is the first relationship that makes everything make sense to me, that gives me the strength to do the organic journey, which is an extraordinary journey. And like you were just sharing, very simple. I mean, so simple. Go outside. Connect with Mother Earth. But incredibly important as a foundational relationship is the relationship we have with Mother Earth. You know, I can't emphasize enough that, you know, I quit doing coke when I was 30, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't cold turkey. I would mess with it for another 5 years on and off with different people. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but I can tell you that I haven't, quote-unquote, messed with sugar once at this point, because the stronger my connection is with Mother Earth, and here's a key component, and my soul is in my body saying to me, okay, this is the next step. Because I'm telling you, 6 months ago, a year ago, you know, I knew, you know, it was in my level of awareness I should let go of sugar, but the truth is, to let go of that aspect of my life would have been like cutting my blood supply off. It's like, you know, a lot of the work we do from a soul perspective is integrating our shadow. So,
yeah,
you know,
there was one.
How much shit can I take and then let go of the challenge of the sweetness? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, there's one thing that you and I really talked about that I think that was something that you were coming into the awareness of after your session with George, and then just in our conversation, I guess we're both looking at this as maybe a wow moment or aha moment of where the fact that we really don't have control over these decisions. We know that we have control, free will from our higher self. But in our day-to-day, we're kind of fooling ourselves when we think that we have control over these addictions or the relationships, because these were predetermined, pre-written experiences that we were going to have, and to believe that we have control over the situation is where we kind of, all of us, maybe give ourselves a little bit, I don't want to say give ourselves too much credit, but we don't accept the fact that we're actually living the experiences that we created, and we don't have control on this level. So we're kind of living them and observing them at the same time.
Exactly. I mean, and the key to that is no guilt. No guilt because, you know, it really becomes quite clear when your soul wants you to make a shift, well, you do it. And I won't say you do it effortlessly, but I've spoken to people recently who have quit smoking cigarettes, and they'll say to me, you know, it was just easier than I thought. I didn't crave as much as I thought. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not craving sugar. I'm witnessing a habit that no longer serves me, and because it no longer serves me, it's much easier to let it go. Now, the results of letting it go are what are kicking my ass. You know, the body is going through a reorganizing of my energy, you know, between the candida and the sugar not being there, or at least, you know, the sugar not being there, not feeding the candida as it recedes. I'm shifting and I'm shaken up by this. I'm emotionally, you know, and I'll even be honest with you, my mental ability, there are days I can't even form sentences, you know, like I don't even know if it'll happen today on the air. That's why, blessed be, I got Patricia with me.
Well, no, that's exactly, but you just nailed it a minute ago because when you said that you're experiencing the result of like quitting, like trying to get rid of the candida, it's already written. It's predestined. It was when the moment that you decided to lay down the candida, it was already pre-written. The only thing that's left is the experience of what leaving the candida behind is for you.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
So of course, that's the significance. That's important. So when you had that addiction to the candida, when you had the addiction to these foods that were creating the candida, when you had this relationship, when you're in this relationship with the candida, the whole purpose is for you to see what it's like to experience the candida, to see how it affects your body, to see how it affects your mind, everything about your daily living, all of your experiences, and then to go through the process of leaving it behind. So
right
it's
on,
already
right
pre-written.
On.
It's already there. So what is it that you're, what's significant about it is how you experience it.
Yes. Beautifully
said. That's huge. And so that's why I say, like what you were saying a few minutes ago, don't judge yourself, or let's not judge, but let's really embrace the experiences. One of the things that came up to me was, like, alcohol, when I had talked to you, you know, previously, how a lot of people will take alcohol and use it to run from the problems, but it opened me up. And then I started really thinking about it, and I was like, wait a minute. It does to a certain level, but my biggest issue was intimacy and being intimate with people, whether it be in a male-female love relationship or in a, like you and I, we have a really good connection, which is very difficult for me in friendships. I mean, I have very few real friends. And so intimacy is an issue for me. And so I thought, well, alcohol allows me to open up. But then again, that's also artificial because I'm having to use alcohol as a method to try to bring that intimacy. But the only way that it can be true intimacy is if it's coming truly from my soul. So I'm sitting here thinking, and this is just something I realized, you know, like in the last couple of days, that I was sitting here thinking, well, alcohol opened me up. And then I'm like, wait a minute. If I'm having to, it was strictly because of our conversation about the candida and how, you know, you were relating to the candida and what it, how you were, you know, running from your emotions and feelings. And so I was like, well, I've got to be doing the same thing then. Alcohol is the same thing for me. I thought it was opening me up, but it was an artificial. There again, it's synthetic, not organic.
Yes.
So I really wasn't getting – it helped as far as me bringing information out about my past and sharing with my husband. So anytime I say David, David's my husband, for anybody that – when I use David, like, you know who he is.
Right.
But
good
that's
job.
My husband. And so it allowed me to share things with him that I wouldn't have shared with other people. So I'm kind of – you know, I'm really grateful for that part of it. So that's pretty huge.
I agree.
But at the same time, I still realized that I didn't get intimate the way that I had conned myself into believing that I was.
Well, but, you know, and isn't, you know, there really is a truth to a statement of you don't know until you know. I mean, because it was so amazing. When I heard George mention the candida on that radio show, He kept saying things like, I'm not going to sugarcoat the truth here. Or, you know, he kept using the term sugarcoat. I'm not going to sugarcoat. And what's so funny is I am one that, you know, I would always express myself to people, you know, in relationship with friends or even on the radio, you know, if a caller, hey, don't candy coat anything, man. Just give it to me straight. You know, if I got a piece of snot in my nose, tell me I got a piece of snot in my nose. Don't worry about etiquette and being, you know, PC. Just give it to me. You know, if I'm pissing you off, give it to me. And I'll be honest with you, most people do. But here's the thing about awareness. But in my own diet, I was prohibiting the truth to come through. And you know, it's like I didn't put it together, but he had said it like three times in that interview. Don't sugarcoat it. It's like, oh, my God, I am sugarcoating it from like a DNA standpoint. I'm sugarcoating my body so that my body is not responding to the sensations that are available to me. Because this isn't just about our emotions. I mean, that's definitely part of it, hands down. But I'm realizing as I go through this journey of letting go of relationships, whether I'm letting go of people, you know, when I let go of the radio show last April, I went through a huge adjustment of, I mean, I let go of something that was doing extremely well. I had extreme fun on it. You know, I was with my best friend at the time, Janine. You know, it's like I let it go because there was, you know, something came up into me that just triggered the shit out of me. And it was like I can't do this. I got to go on blackout because I don't even understand it. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not even going to candy coat it. There was a rage in me that I couldn't process by the following Monday to do another show. It was like, I knew from a standpoint, I got street punk in me, and I didn't want to have the last 2 years that we had such a successful show turn into a street match. You know what I'm saying? Because it was Janine who triggered me. And just so you know, I'm just throwing this out there. April 1st of this year, we're going to do a one-year anniversary of that show. So I'll speak obviously more of that when Janine is on the air with me. But I say this because here's what it's showing me. I let go of a relationship that was good. I was in the prime, so to speak, because there is something incredibly self-empowering to let go of that which is kicking my ass and letting go of that which is pumping me up.
Because, I get that.
Right?
I get
because
that.
Addictions don't just take you down. Addictions keep you from things through a level of distraction that if you're not keen on it, and the thing about the soul is the soul works through metaphors, because I'm realizing now my relationships with people are very similar metaphorically to my relationship with food.
Yeah, I mean, so much of, when you were saying sugar, I was trying so hard not to interrupt you.
Oh, I love you, baby. You can interrupt
using me. My mute button a lot. When you were saying sugarcoat, and I was like, it's back to that damn language. I mean, if we would just pay attention.
Right.
Sugarcoat.
Yes.
When someone says, I'm not going to sugarcoat it for you, they're telling, I mean, the language itself is telling you exactly what sugar is doing to you day to day.
Exactly. No, exactly.
And then when you were talking about relationships and, like, you know, it's the strangest thing, because any time that and I'm always the one that exits the relationship. I've never had – this is one thing that I've not experienced in this lifetime. I've not had anyone exit my life in the relationship. I'm always the one doing the exiting. I'm not saying that I haven't been hurt in a relationship. I'm just saying that I'm usually the one that makes the decision that this is the route I'm going. See you later.
Right. Okay.
And a lot of times it's in a good place when I do that. Not now. Today I have the awareness that, you know, when relationships are, when we talk about how people feed off of your energy and they want to basically imprint onto you what's going on in their life and you've got to set the boundaries for yourself, I'm in that awareness now. But in the past, and again, I think this is something that's coming from our higher selves, because it doesn't make sense in the midst of a good, what you would consider a good relationship, what's pleasing to you, that you would just all of a sudden say, okay, I'm out of here, done. And just out of the blue, and it makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's something that your higher self is, your higher self is redirecting you for a reason.
Exactly. No, absolutely.
I don't know if
remember
I'm
the Hayoki medicine we talked about?
Right. Yes.
This is very, you know, feel free to share, you know, nothing is as it appears to be.
Yeah, if there's anything that we've talked about in private that you want to bring up, for me to bring up, let me know, because we've talked so much and I don't.
Well, okay,
yeah.
Definitely. Well, I can tell you, all right, I'm going to take that as the cue. Okay,
yeah.
I definitely, and you bring up, you know, I would never bring up your stuff, but I want to bring up something
that you helped me with. No, you feel free to bring it up.
No, right on, babe, right on. Okay,
okay.
Well, one of the things that you helped me with significantly, and just so the audience knows, Hayoki medicine, which both me and Patricia live by, in essence is you can learn from pain. Pain is not something that should be avoided at all costs. Pain is something that we both look at as a valuable aspect of our conditioning. Both into separate, both out of separation and into wholeness. So, with that being said, I have in most recent times George talked about in his book, and most of the people that are listening know his book, that the way we knew we were going to be going to the fifth dimension, you know, in the ascension, is that we had gone all the way down as far as we could in separation in this lifetime, which was ultimately the first and second dimension. And the first and second dimensions are not the mineral kingdom and the flowers and the plants. Like, you know, that's all part of the artificial coding, and it's all bullshit. The first and second dimensions are dimensions of immoral and amoral behavior. And in my humble opinion, in those dimensions, we're not even really physical. I mean, we're more like singular. This is how I see it in my mind's eye. We're like single-celled amoebas literally attacking each other for energy and consumption. You know, it's like everything to the extreme. Like, that's all we're doing is attacking each other for consumption and how much can we, you know, the greed and, you know, there's nothing nice about us, really. And I was talking to Patricia the other day going, I can't wrap my head around if I've done that or not. I just had this block. And by the way, Candida will block us from seeing what is right in front of us. That's part of its nature. It's like this filtering system of our awareness. So when I brought it up to George, George essentially said to me, he goes, "Do you know this is your last lifetime?" And I was like, I'm relatively certain, yes. He goes, "Then don't worry about that which you can't wrap your mind around." And I was like, okay, I appreciate that answer. And then I brought it up to Patricia. And Patricia, so eloquent. Well, are you open to sharing what you said? Because, I mean, I can share it, but it's your word. So, you know, do you remember what you shared?
Yeah, I do, and I'm open to sharing it.
Okay.
Like I told you, I'm prepared. Once I made the decision to open myself up, I am prepared for judgment. I'm prepared for acceptance. I'm prepared for however it is that people are going to receive the information, because we're all at different places and people are going to process it differently. Some people are going to, it's going to resonate and it's going to be like, oh yes. And other people are going to be like, what the hell? I mean,
no,
okay,
right on, right on. And I appreciate, to be honest, that disclaimer that Patricia just gave, apply that to me too. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, so from the last time that we talked, anybody that listened to our last internet chat is aware that I was sexually abused as a child. And so a lot of people, and I got to get out of the habit of saying a lot of people, when we see a child that is victimized, it goes against our heart. Like, we can't comprehend who could do such a thing. How can you hurt someone that's so innocent, someone that's so vulnerable? And then all these things come into play later on in life. Well, this person now is going to be tainted. Their whole view of the world is going to be different because they weren't nurtured in love and kindness, and, you know, they didn't have the experience of what a sheltered, loving home environment would be. And so I had to really, this is when you start looking in the mirror and you start really getting authentic with yourself and looking at who you are and taking responsibility and accountability for your own experiences, your own life choices. And when Goldie was saying, you know, how did she know that she had actually gone into the lower dimensions? And I said, well, there's things in your life that you don't have an actual experience that you can go back and look at and say, oh, this occurred, and this is why I'm drawn to this particular situation, or this is why I do what I'm doing. It is because you have been in those domains, and it's something that is in your DNA. It's in your soul. It's part of who you are. It's your experiences that are all bringing you into balance, because you were the rapist. You were the one that was being raped. And you interrupt and add anything in, you know, like if I'm talking and you want to.
No. This is, what you're sharing is how I got my insight. So go. You know, I'll share afterwards. Keep going. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that I had to really recognize was that in my adult relationships, I was very dominant, and I liked violent. And this is just honesty, and I don't know how everyone's gonna take it, but I'm just gonna, you know, be honest with you, so that if anyone
you're
can
beautiful, babe. You're
understand
fucking
this.
Beautiful. You are.
Okay.
And powerful and courageous. Sorry.
Thank you. I wanted violent sex, and to be honest with you, the molestation that I experienced at 5, that was kind of it was different. It wasn't really violent. But it was painful. I mean, it wasn't violent. And the rape that occurred when I was 15 was not violent either. I didn't even fight it. This man came into my home, and my mom had prearranged this, and I just laid down and let it go. I mean, and then it became an ongoing event that happened like weekly, every Saturday. But it was still never really violent, but there was something within me that was violent. I could see myself as the rapist. As an adult, I enjoyed violent sex. I liked biting. I liked hot candle wax. I liked blood. I wanted to bite and cause people to bleed. I wanted to be bitten and bleed. And to people that would be, you know, very, what's the word for that? When you're in the bondage.
Well they would, if you haven't experienced the first and second dimensions,
mm-hmm.
That there's one way, you know, the people who haven't experienced those dimensions look at that and go, oh, how deranged you are, you know,
right.
Oh, you're
right.
how fucked, you know, they don't even see that there is deliciousness in that, because Patricia doesn't feel out there on her own. Listen, I know immoral behavior. See, for me, it's not necessarily violence. It's immoralness. I mean, I sold cocaine for 12 years. I mean, I have robbed. I have stolen. I have lied. I, you know, I can't even begin to tell you how crime and me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I am a criminal. I know criminal behavior. I know what it's like to, you know, to bully people. And I should say, I was telling Patricia, I hadn't thought about this in a very long time. When I was about 5 years old, I threw a baby bunny up into the air. I mean, way up into the air. And when it came down, it was dead. And, you know, in all honesty, I wasn't devastated by that experience. I was in wonderment of it, like, wow, I killed the bunny. Like, you know, where I know kids, boy, you flush their fish down the toilet and they freak. You know, it's like, I have had violence in my life. I mean, I used to beat up my dog and then love her afterwards, like a psychopath, a little mini psychopath. I just want you to know you are not out there alone. I will put myself out there as well, saying, you know, because
this feels weird, because you know that when you say these things to people that haven't experienced it,
they're going to judge us. But to be honest, I don't care if they judge us, because here's the beauty of you, Patricia. The beauty of you is you helped me see that I've been to the first and second dimension. It is a part of my frequency. It is in my experience, and not from a fearful space. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I have never harmed a child that I've nannied for. I mean, it's so funny. I take care of a Jeannie, Scott's mom, and she'll say to me, now I yell and scream. Hey, my parents were from New York City. We yell and we scream. She'll say to me, you know, are you going to hit me now? And I'll look at her and go, no, I'm not, Jeannie. I don't need to discipline you. You know, that's her era. Her era was, as a child, if she didn't do what she was told, she got hit. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to hit you. And I look at that and I go, because that is no longer a part of, I don't have to do that to have control. In fact, with her, I've recognized, listen, you are an adult. If you don't want to bathe, Well, I'm just, okay, don't bathe. You know, if, if you start getting itchy in your crotch, well, don't blame me. There it is. You know, but the truth is, you so beautifully showed me that, you know, I'll be honest with you, a lot of my relationship with Scott when I first met him was all about a darkness. We explored darkness together. We would joke dark. We were dark. I mean, when he was drinking, it was a physical, violent relationship. And I still stayed with him because I loved him. And all of these things, as soon as you said to me, can you accept – no, and because what was the thing that you said that I love you? Like, I'm okay with immoral behavior, but I don't like it thrusted upon me.
Oh, see, thank you. That's what I was just getting ready to say.
Okay,
what I was
gonna please.
Say, because I've experienced – we were definitely on the same page right there. One of the things that is so obvious to me, and I shared this with David after you and I talked because it was so huge to me, because I had realized that anytime he shares his dark side with me, I completely knock it down. Like, you know, I judge him and I push it aside.
Okay.
And it was the first time, like, really in talking to you that I actually had spoken this out loud and recognized it when we were speaking, is I'm very accepting of my dark side. I'm very accepting of when I have brought the darkness in and I've swam it and loved it, embraced it, hugged it, kissed it, made love to it, all that. That's great. You take your dark side and you try to push it on me. You try to bring me into your darkness, and then I rebel. I mean, I push that away very quickly. I'm not accepting of someone else's darkness being projected onto me, but I'm very accepting of my own. And so that was one of the things that, you know, I guess in a way that I have a boundary. Like, I know what I will accept and I know what I will not accept. And it's not that, but it's also a big deal, and also me accepting the darkness that exists in someone else. Like, okay, that's your darkness. I see it. I'm no longer going to say, oh, I can't believe this is what you would do. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I look at myself.
Yeah.
Okay, well, all I want to do is, like, bite you and suck the blood out of your body. But, hey,
I love you, Dave. Right on.
You,
I love your honesty. It's fucking refreshing.
You know,
it's awesome. Yeah.
When I feel a pin, and I'm like, oh, I need this. You know, I mean, it's
right.
Funny, but so I'm just saying, like, it helped me realize that, okay, everyone has their dark side. I may not want to go with you on yours because I'm really dealing with mine.
Right.
But I'm not going
to
judge your dark side anymore. I'm gonna look at your dark side the same way that I see mine.
Yeah.
Just don't push it on me. I'll observe it. I'll say, okay, I get it. Good. I don't want it, though.
Yeah, no, well, and you know, there is such learning to master these things. And I'll be honest with you, like I said, on some level, I believe I have mastered the whole quantum entanglement thing. Now, and this is what is coming to my awareness. All of us have natural gifts of empathy, natural gifts of clairvoyance, clairaudience, whatever the esoteric aspect of ourselves. I truly believe we all come, well, let me say it this way. Those who know this is their last lifetime, I guess, like everybody else, I am speaking to those who are in the journey with us, which if you know this is your last lifetime, there's plenty of gifts within your experience. What I have found is, you know, to understand those gifts, and here's how they often show up. They often show up from the subconscious mind as the curse in your life. Because I can tell you, it has been a curse in my life in the first 30 years of being entangled with people, having their emotions become part of my emotions, but nobody telling me there's such a thing called empathy. I didn't know about empathy until I explored, you know, my own spiritual journey. So it literally became an awareness of me that my insecurity as a child, and I'm talking insecure 4, 5, 6, was really my mother's insecurity. I mean, because I had been molested by that point, which I realize can contribute to insecurity. But on the daily basis, I was totally quantumly entangled with my mother. She was the, I mean, my mother would go away with my dad on the weekend. They would drop us off at a friend's house, me and my brother. And no lie, I would stand at the front door, cry for 14 hours, go to sleep, wake up, cry for another 14 hours, go to sleep, wake up, and it would be the third day and they'd come to pick us up. You know, and they were like, you know, your kid's kind of, you know, a little whack there. You know, she just literally stood at the door and cried. Because all I knew is I couldn't be without my mother. I mean, that, and of course, you know, the symbolism is kind of humorous because it was when my, well, not the symbolism, the paradox. When my biological mother died, that was when I began going into the woods and now found, you know, my other mother, my true mother, in my humble opinion, Mother Earth. And I'll be honest with you, I have the same relationship with her. See, I'm not changing my ability to quantumly entangle. I'm now just understanding. So by quantumly entangling with Mother Earth, for the exact reasons you shared at the beginning of this conversation, she fills my tank. She fills me up with confidence, with health, with well-being, with peacefulness, with confidence. I mean, all of it. I just feel nothing but amazement when I am quantumly entangled with her. But that also, she gives me the strength now to, okay, quantumly entangle with people who, you know, I might not have, quote unquote, a desired experience from what I always call the Disney point of view. Disney point of view is always the point of view that says, you know, our love relationship should look like this and our friendship should look like this. And, you know, it's like, and when in the truth is, you know, I'm exploring the darker side of my experience this lifetime. Hands down, I am a dark explorer this lifetime. And I can find the joy in the darkness because, in my humble opinion, the darkness for me has been way more accepting of my authenticity than the light ever has been.
You're also bringing it to balance. That's the significant part because when you were just saying that, it's kind of like you're saying, well, you've this lifetime is more about the darkness. I think this lifetime is more about the awareness of the darkness and the balance between the light and the dark. And that's why it's so – there's a difference in walking on the dark side and not knowing that there's a path that's different than the dark side, or just walking on the light side only and not, you know, dancing with the dark side. We're at a place where we see the light and the dark in ourselves, and we understand it well. And now this is why we can say we notice our final life experience here, because we're actually bringing this into balance and we know it.
Yeah, yeah. No, and truth be told, I believe that's literally a what I would call a road sign of last lifetime in first, second, third, and fourth dimension. That's part of the awareness that, you know, because it kind of makes sense to me. Because I'm not saying I don't hate the light. I mean, of course I don't hate the light, but it just didn't fulfill me this lifetime. You know, I mean, because that was the whole Heyoki thing, too. Recognizing the Heyoki thing was that, you know, I learned how to be, and this is going to sound crazy, but I learned how to have my integrity through being a Coke dealer.
Right.
You know, like, and I did, you know, when the pregnant women used to, I did. I mean, there's no, I didn't learn it by being, you know, selling Girl Scout cookies on the corner. I learned it, you know, by selling cocaine to, you know, the locals around my area, you know. But that doesn't mean I didn't learn it.
Yeah, no, I totally get that because, as you know, there's someone in my life that's shared that similar experience, and it's kind of weird because you're doing something that to most people would be not a moral action, yet you're handling your business with integrity, which makes no sense.
Exactly, yes. Well, see, and again, that is for the people that don't understand Heyoka, that don't understand last lifetime, that don't understand balance, you know, and as George puts it so succinctly, the righteous people, the righteous people who believe one way, only way, their way, that's the way, which, of course, you know, at this point, there's no need to try and convince them otherwise, because the awareness then becomes, well, listen, I know what comes around goes around, and in your righteousness, you're going to get smacked upside your head at some point, whether it's this lifetime or another lifetime, because you can't change the way the universe works. And if you put in righteousness, which is essentially a judgment for not doing it the way they believe it should be done, then you're going to get judged for not doing it a way, quote-unquote, somebody believes it should be done. Patricia, I think we have a caller.
Okay.
I'm good. All right, you cool with that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, me too. Area code 631, you're on the air. Did you hit number one?
You hit number one?
Okay, I think I scared him. Okay, we don't have... there's a new studio for Blog Talk Radio, and a little thing popped up beside them, so I unmuted them. They're back on mute, so... Okay, no problem. No problem.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so, yes, I didn't mean to, you know, I just thought I saw a caller. Anyways,
Well, one thing I wanted to say, like, and this is where, for me, like... We were talking too in our last conversation. I was saying there's some people that you know that they're not an old soul in this universe, and when you see that, because this is where I say, I mean, I've been empathic my whole life, and I've known it. There's times that I've tried to do it because I would go back to my religious mindset of, oh, is this coming from Satan? Am I evil? You know, why do I have these powers I shouldn't have and stuff like that? But I've been empathic my whole life, and I've had knowing. And so when I have the ability to look at someone and sense that they are not old souls here, you know, I shared that I had a family member that, like, if you played a game of cards, that was satanic, because if you played a game of Uno, that could lead to gambling. I mean, just the very... I mean, seriously.
You got to laugh at that.
Yeah, and there's no anything to life. There's absolutely nothing you can do other than walk this very straight and narrow path. They can't understand the dark side on any level. So I wouldn't say, well, okay, now I'm better than that person because, hey, I know the dark side, I know the light. You have to actually embrace these people and understand that, like when we talk about in this, eventually they're going to be, well, they're a way shower themselves, because they're here to show the way also. They're just at a different point. One day,
exactly,
they'll be doing exactly what you're doing
right now.
You know?
We were just as righteous when we first came in.
Oh, yeah. Even in this lifetime, I've had those moments.
Even in
fake.
This lifetime. That's true, too. Right on. That is true.
Yeah.
Call me out on that, babe. That's right on.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they're fake, because we all inside, we know who we are.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's
even
the journey, right?
Judgment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remembering.
So that is indeed the journey, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and I'll tell you, it is it is really very interesting to me as I go deeper. I mean, the best way I can describe, you know, this whole Candida experience is I'm going deeper into another layer of self. And I'll tell you, initially, I mean, my mind was like, you know, you're going to give up sugar? You know, I can't even tell you how frightened and how it felt ludicrous. It was like, there's no way you could live without sugar. But as I experience yet another level, because as the sugar is out of my system, it truly is creating a space for more of me to come in. And the me is not hyped up, cracked up, and, you know, buzzing along at a super high speed. And I'm telling you, I can feel it. I mean, the very first week I could feel that there was this, like, level of, I mean, the best way to put it was there was a level of presence that was like, this is life. You know, like, you know, Mother Nature tells us, when I go into the woods, I look at the time of, like, the tree time. What tree time is on a totally different a totally different scope than people time, in the sense of they seem to move much slower. But I'll tell you, what they share with you is, you know, perseverance and strength. And you, a huge message that I have gotten from the trees is the ability to be in one space patiently. I mean, patiently. To me, they exude patience, because I've been such a hyper energy and hyperactive, hyper artificially. I mean, because it was either cocaine, which is, you know, a stimulant, sugar, which is a stimulant. And I admit, I still have my dance and my relationship with marijuana. I do. That is definitely coming up for review, because I can see now when I get stoned how it definitely, I hunger for the sugar. Now I have the consciousness to go, no, I'm not going to do that. But so instead of just relaxing me, which is how I used to read it, it is now, it does make my stomach relax, but it kicks in other programs that I'm going, you know, inevitably, I don't want to have to fight my own, I don't want to become my own saboteur. You know, it's like I'm done with the sugar, and I'm seeing now that there's a good chance I'm going to be done with the ganja, because it's just simply not, it serves the sugar and not my soul.
Well, that's so funny, because when you were, after I had shared our conversation with David, he goes, if she really wants to fix her candida issue, then she's going to have to give up her pod issue, because that's
exactly
what and we were laughing, because we were thinking about my son when I was clueless, because I never got into the drug thing in my youth,
right,
ever.
Right.
And then as I got older, like I think I may have shared this before, I tried pot twice, I tried ecstasy twice, I tried coke once, and every time that I ever tried anything, it was because it was peer pressure. I was in a party, somebody was like, hey, you got to do it, and I'd already been drinking alcohol, so I was like, okay, I'll try it, you know. But my son was smoking pot as a teen, and I was clueless. Okay, I just thought he was lazy, and yeah. It started because it really just made him kind of just chill, I guess, all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a very relaxing drug.
Yeah, but it was so funny, because once David enlightened me to the fact that he was getting high, I mean, he would come in and he would just scarf down everything in the house, and. But he was always, like, obsessed with his, you know, weight and stuff like that. So he was working out and doing all these other things. But then he would come in and eat, like, a whole bag of chips and cookies and want me to cook him a meal and all this stuff. And I'm like, good gracious.
Right.
So I can see where those – and also I have a memory of my mom as a child when, you know, as harsh as she was, the only time that she was tolerable was actually when she was getting high. That's when you would see her. That's when this harsh woman all of a sudden would laugh and be calm and tell you
well,
that
see,
she loved.
And that's the key. What you just, see, different drugs interact with people differently, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
We even talked about that last conversation. How, you know, and in all honesty, that needs, see, because nothing is inherently bad.
Right.
I think everything in moderation. If you're going to do anything, do it in moderation.
Right. But I also think it's an experience, and you have
yeah,
to
absolutely.
Instead of
judgmental, I agree.
You have to accept that. Okay, this was the experience that I needed to have. So I'm not going to judge myself. I'm going to look at where I was in this experience, how it impacted my life, then where I am in the transition, and where I wind up. I mean, that's
exactly
non-judgmental.
No. Well, and you know, and the truth is, I'm learning. From my own experience, I'm learning from my relationships that I quantumly entangle with. You know, judgment is really, it's such an artificial emotion. Because, you know, when you have the bigger picture of this is a life of balance, you know, the soul is really making the choices of when I'm going to quit an addiction. So it's like so much is not in my control. And the judgment kind of, because, like, I'm just having, I had this awareness when I was swimming today. It was like, I'm not saying that I haven't had thoughts in my head where, okay, I want to quit. Because I remember George was talking about quitting pot about a year ago. He said that the essence, the being, the entity behind pot had, you know, it's essentially what he's now referencing, if you've listened to his latest interviews, he's referencing as the queen bitch of the universe. Well, she is now infiltrating the pot. So in other words, pot used to be, I believe, part of Mother Earth's essence. That is, it has been hijacked, like almost everything else we know, and is no longer the essence of Mother Earth. It is now a false entity, I mean, an artificial entity has hijacked it. So therefore, like we just said, what is it contributing to? Well, the pot doesn't contribute to me feeling closer to Earth. If the pot contributes to me wanting sugar.
Okay, bam. So, I'm gonna interrupt right here.
Okay.
This will be huge in what you're just saying. Hadn't thought about it until you just nailed it. Okay. Pot's been illegal, correct?
Yes.
So why all of a sudden a push to legalize marijuana?
Exactly.
Serving a purpose that was
for the agenda that is artificial.
Exactly.
Yes. No, that's a fantastic point. And it's,
yeah,
it's,
I mean,
spot on. Yes. That's
so,
and George,
yeah,
even, George shared that. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well,
because if you look at all of the drugs that are legal, cigarettes, caffeine, alcohol, all because George was saying that where sugar is a definite contributor to candida, alcohol is actually the number one contributor. He goes, it actually changes into candida quicker than sugar.
Well, that's
and
what
I'm
we're
like,
talking about too, like the beer belly, like you see.
Yeah.
You know, I share, and David can beat me up later, but David loves beer, and he's, you can see in him, like he'll say, oh, well, it doesn't really affect me, but he's the kind of person he would really like to come home every day because his life is stressful when it comes to making the money. You know, like he's one of these people that takes on this huge role as I'm the provider, I'm the man, I'm the provider, and I need to take care of my family. So he carries all that in. So at the end of the day, he likes some wine, and he wants to drink his beer. Well, what comes along with that is the beer gut. That even if your people will go pass a physical exam, which he has, and be healthy, they still are dealing with that beer gut. I mean, that's still that is a physical awareness of what's going on.
Well, and I can tell you from my own experience that beer belly is literally. It's such an artificial bloat. I mean, because I'm for the first time not feeling constantly bloated. You know, since I let go of the sugar and significantly reduced my carbs, it's like I can feel the difference. First of all, I've lost 5 pounds, and I'll be honest with you. I'm not doing this to lose weight. You know, I just basically said, hey, listen, I'm in my 40s. I'm entering menopause. I don't care that I'm not, quote, unquote, sexually attracting, you know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, when I walk down the street and in the grocery store. It's like, you know, my journey is to do the soul inner work. So, you know, if I become, you know, fat and homely, well, so be it. Scott loves me. I'm good. Let's call it a day. But, but the truth of the matter is that beer gut is like, it's like a big balloon inside of you that it's this weird thing where you're bloated and yet you're still hungry all the time.
But you know it's not you either. That's what I would like when I go into David's world, which is exactly what you're talking about, the sweets, the carbs, the alcohol, I get the bloat. And I'll look at it, and I'm like 4 months pregnant here. Come on.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This is not – and I will tell him this is not me. This is something – I know this is not me. And, you know, I don't know if it
well,
really
no,
connects
exactly,
with him. Like,
because
well,
I used
you,
to say, what am I going to give birth to? Because I was like 9 months pregnant. I wasn't even 4 months. I was 9 months pregnant going, well, what the hell am I going to give birth to? And I just kept going, well, maybe it's when I go through zero point with Mother Earth. That, you know, I kept going, maybe this is my, like my organs. Because I've always read a lot of stuff that when you go through like ascension symptoms, quote unquote, people get the Buddha bellies. And so, you know, at the time I was just kind of, you know, I think what it is we'll always find information that will keep us in, you know, where we are. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm going through the ascension symptoms. That's why I'm bloated to shit. You know? And the truth is, when I was ready for it, the absolute, because, you know, when George said recently about the consciousness and soul being separate, that was also another thing that really, really struck me as, like, I basically started my journey consciously to ascend in 1992. And up until about the last 3 years,
stop you there because I'm just going to say this really quickly.
No problem.
And I'm going to go on. In 1991 is when my daughter died. In 1992 is when my quest started. So there again.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and we didn't even know that. Right on. I remember there was, I believe it was Cryon. I don't know how many people are familiar with the Cryon channelings, but they literally had a thing that said, state out loud you're going to ascend. And I was sitting in a parking lot waiting for my friend to come down. We were getting ready to go to the bars. And I just stated it. I went, oh, I will ascend this lifetime. Definitely. I will. I just knew I would. And I was like, I'll state it. And it has absolutely been my driving force. But the journey of ascension, which is so funny, based on, quote, unquote, the new age, will have you leave your body to ascend. And
like we talked about, like
down, that is artificial. That is not, it is not an ascension out of body. It is an incension into the body. And the truth is, my body, you know, and I'm not one of those to go, oh, my body's my temple. I have beat the crap out of my body between drugs and cigarettes and food. No lie, for 49 years, I've beat the crap out of it. But here's the truth. I don't hate myself for doing that because here's what my body's showing me. Okay, you ready to go now? You ready to be here, grounded and truly incending and doing what, you know, getting to where you want to be? Because if you're really ready, let's go. It's an unbelievable synergy that my body, I'm telling you, the amount of cigarettes I've smoked and drugs that I have put into this temple, she was like, she just kept going.
Hey, somebody once said to me in a different context, but I'll apply it here. And it's so true because there's so many things when we look at our bodies and what we've done to it, we'll always find shame in it. Like if our body doesn't meet this perfection that Hollywood and the media has put out there, but every mark on your body is your battle scar.
Yeah.
Everything about your body that you get, just look at it like this. You're experiencing life. And you're not altering it. You're not going and you're not getting Botox and you're not getting cosmetic surgery to, you know, change whatever. Everything that is on your body, in your body, whatever, wherever you are today is a representation of where you've been, how
Absolutely.
The experiences you have. Where your body is next year will be where you are then. It's who you
right.
are. It's what you are. There's really nothing to be ashamed of. And that's the biggest thing. If we could get past that would be...
Well, I think that's part of the design. When you get past it, it shows that you truly are doing the soul's business. Because, see, the business of the soul is not to just make us believe. First and foremost, in my humble opinion, what the media and the culture says is sexy and healthy, in my humble opinion, is starvation and emaciation. You know, these women that are size ones. Now, if you're a size one because that's your natural metabolism, hey, that's cool. But to say that the whole damn planet should be a size one to be sexy is so, what a crock of shit that is. I'm sorry. I'm a petite girl who happens to be about 80 pounds, probably about 50 pounds overweight. And I'm happy to say, you're right, I'm not at my sexiest right now, but I am strong. I am. Mm-hmm. And I think strong is the new sexy. Not emaciated. Strong.
Right.
Strong.
And I would say even for the men, where the men have this idea that they're supposed to be, you know, 6 foot whatever and...
Yeah, 3% body fat.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. They go through it, you know, the same way. They try to make up for it through money. They think, well, okay, if I can't achieve it physically, well, then I'll earn a big paycheck and it won't matter.
Absolutely.
I can, you know, buy my
yes.
way.
Yes. You know. Yes. Well, and it's truly understanding in your own journey, you know, the processing. Because, like, what I love about what we're sharing is this has been our processing. You know, we get a thought, you know, and then we continue to live, and then something shifts us from that thought goes from a concept into a behavior. And like you were saying, you know, earlier, I am definitely also learning, you know, not to be so hard on the people that I choose to quantumly entangle with, that they have to be doing the changes, because the truth is, it can't be true for me that my changes come when my soul wants it to come and not be true for them. You know, it's like, so I have to learn a whole new way to relate to the people that I choose to be in contact with. I mean, Patricia, you're fabulous because it seems to come very natural with me and you, where it's not even like, you know, I don't bite my lip and go, God, I want to say something, but just let her be. I mean, I don't do that with you because you speak a language that I absolutely understand, which is you're self-responsible, you're incredibly astute in your awareness, and you're humble and willing to say, yeah, I fucked up. I'm going to change my mind. I mean, because the two things I see in my own self that were major promoters that allowed me to even get to the place that I could let go of sugar was or is letting go of the belief that I had to be right. I mean, and holy shit, was this a major belief in my world. Major belief. Because I just bought into that. My father is a I have to be right kind of guy, and I, you know, I took that condition from him and said I own that, and that if you have to be right, then you can't allow yourself to shift, because that would mean you were wrong on some level, and if you can't accept that, you're not going to shift. And the second is the humility / vulnerability aspect. That the true soul strength of true humbleness and true vulnerability is just, I can't even put that one into words yet. I mean, I just simply know I have experienced true humbleness and humility and go, oh, I had this all wrong. And yes, I'm the first one that can admit that I had it all wrong, that I need to rewire myself, and I'm working on that. And, you know, it's like, because pride and prejudice, you know, not to quote a movie, but pride and prejudice are huge blocks to people being willing to change. And that has pride and prejudice are beliefs. They're not even changing diet or, you know, physically telling a friend, I'm not going to call you anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's not even necessarily, it doesn't show up in the physical world. It's a concept and a belief and a stream of consciousness, major important if you want to live a life that is in sync with the shifting that is available that, to all of us right now.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'll leave it up to my family to correct me later, maybe. But
okay.
I don't think that I have lived prideful in this lifetime. I think that's one of the things that has allowed me to move through some of the obstacles that I may have had, because I don't think I understood pride. I don't think I was raised with pride.
Okay,
so,
right. I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, so, like, for me, I get the idea of, like, it's not so much that I wanted to be right, it's that I believed 100% in whatever I present to someone. And when I'm speaking my truth, when I'm in a relationship with someone, whatever it is that I'm sharing with a person, I'm usually 100% into it. Because, like you and I have talked about, anything that I do 100+%. So if I'm in it, then it's my truth, and I'm on my pulpit, and I'm speaking that truth. Because I really, it was a belief. Even if it was a lie, it was a belief.
Yes.
So it wasn't a prideful thing. It was like really me standing in my truth. So I would always, you know, be there in that. But I don't think that pride ever came into it for me, because I just don't think that I've had pride.
Well, and you know, I think there might be, like, one point in the journey where people are like, oh, what do you mean you don't have pride? You have to have pride in yourself, because, you know, that's what makes you feel good about yourself and blah, 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 blah. But then, okay, let's fast forward to 2014. How lucky. How lucky you didn't have, it's like, you didn't have to overcome it. It just never got in the way. How beautiful is that? That's the beauty of the times we live in, I believe, right now, that whatever it is we believe that we didn't get from our childhood, I promise you, if you look at it from its polar opposite, or you know what I mean, or from the journey of an expanded truth, if there's a flavor of consciousness that wasn't given to you, that the matrix says, you know, that the culture says, you know, these are mandatory for success, I promise you, that's a gift, not a curse. You know.
Yeah, and I think, well, I think for me, like, it was more of a quest to be able to find something to have pride in. Because I wouldn't.
Interesting.
I wouldn't have seen pride as a negative thing. I would have seen, like, oh, there's nothing about my life that I should take pride in. Everything for me would have been like trying to. Because I know that I've spent a lot of time feeling like inadequate, or, you know,
well,
not good
exactly
enough.
My point. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Insecure about things. So it's kind of like what I was telling you in sales. When I was in sales, everybody was, you know, they wanted to do 100% markup on, you know, on our products. And for me, it was like, I would really want to evaluate what my clients' needs were, and I didn't look at that I had to get wealthy. I looked at what would it take for me to provide for my children, and what was I comfortable with, you know, passing on to this client, and, you know, that I could live with. And so for a lot of people, they would say, well, you just don't have confidence in yourself. I was chastised about that a lot. You don't have confidence in yourself, because if you really believe in yourself, you could put whatever markup you want to on this product and sell it. And I didn't feel that way, because for me it was like, I don't have to do that. I have to do what it takes to make sure their needs are met and make sure that I can take care of my children. It was never,
you know,
for me about the getting rich.
Well, and then we spoke, right? Because you did, you sold enough to take care of your clients and take care of your children, correct?
Right. Yes, definitely.
See, that's when you start seeing the language of the artificial support. See, artificially speaking, most people in the artificial world, no, not most, if you're in the artificial world, you're looking about how much can you make most in this one transaction. It wouldn't be about, well, you know, I can do 100 transactions, so to speak, and make $100. If I can mark it up 200% and only do 2 transactions to make $100. But that would not include, so now that's not thinking about, but there would be 98 people who potentially might not be able to afford the service or whatever, because you marked it up 200%. You know what I'm saying?
Right, and also, yeah, and also I feel like, and that's where I would go back again to pride. If I was operating on a, with a prideful level, then of course to come back in, and I was the only female in this technology sales in our area because it was not something that women were doing. They would sell, like, phone lines and things, but they never sold, like, data equipment, telecommunications equipment. That was a man's world. And
okay.
So I was the only girl, so I was definitely, you know, being, you know, picked on a little bit. And it was okay, but see, if pride had played a part, then pride would mean I'd have to come in and do the 100%, you know, the 100% markup because I'd be competing with the men, but I never let that get to me.
Nice.
Nice. So that's why I say, you know, somebody may come and say, well, no, you've got pride issues. I don't know. I'll ask my husband afterwards. But I just personally, when I look back over life choices that I've made and how I saw things, I don't see where I would think that I may have. I don't think that pride was ever really a part of this particular life. It was ever an issue for me in this life.
Yeah, no, and I respect that. I mean, I mean, pride has definitely been an issue for me. Because what's so interesting is I've had other relationships that people who have, like, quote unquote, the issue is low self-esteem. It's almost like they can't even imagine there being an issue with pride. It's like, how could there be an issue of being confident with yourself? And it's like, the word is cocky, my friend. The word is you have a false sense of security because you don't believe you can get hit with, quote unquote, a deception or a betrayal. And trust me, when that betrayal hits you, it stings really, really bad. You know, it's like, because the whole key to life in general is the understanding that on both sides of center, there are issues. That's why, you know, because for me, I remember having, growing up going, my biggest issue growing up was that I wasn't pretty enough. And all the pretty girls had no problems, and all the average ugly girls had tons of problems. That was, you know, and now that I know about, you know, the MK Ultra and what Hollywood movie stars and you know, the models and the modeling industry are, you know, they're all significantly, you know, they're mind controlled, for God's sake. It's like, you know, and I just look at that and go, you know, and they clearly left me alone. I didn't have beauty as a curse, but the truth is, without even joking, I didn't have beauty as a curse. You know, like, that is, just like everything else, there is a pendulum swing that beautiful people have to, you know, deal with, you know, superficiality and not being taken seriously. Women especially are, the more beautiful you are, quote unquote, the stupider you are and the dumber you are. I mean, so there's all of that to overcome if you happen to be a beautiful woman with an intelligence. And, you know, and it's like, it just, it's like, that's the wisdom to know everything, that there's, it's never just the poor have problems but the rich don't. Oh, my God. Not
when
even close there.
No, exactly. When I was out selling the men in my office, they pretty much would come out and say, well, you're sleeping with the clients. I mean, there's no way. How could you beat, you know, this guy, this competitor, because he always gets every deal. I had to deal with that. So I would actually go and buy suits that were like two or three sizes too big for me and try to look frumpy.
Right.
So that,
interesting.
And,
yeah.
So that,
no. Right on.
So that I couldn't be, you know, so that I would be taken seriously, because I sold an item that was a brand new. It was a multiplex that allowed video conferencing and telecommunications and, you know, data networking to our local hockey team. It was in Raleigh, North Carolina, the Hurricanes. And it was, they wanted to be able to do video conferencing and do all this stuff, and it was a brand new, like, $30,000 piece of equipment that all the guys were just dying to get their hands on and sell. And I went out, didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was just really honest, you know, about the equipment itself because it was so brand new. But
right.
I was told to present it. And so I did. And I told him, I said, look, you probably really don't need this. And, you know, if you, but if you, you know, if this is what you want to do down the road, then, you know, I explained what it would do and whatever. And I got the deal. I came back and they were like, what? You know, everybody was freaking out because this was like the guy's world. They were supposed to sell it. I was the girl that had been doing this for
yeah.
a year. There's no way I should be able to sell it. And I came back in and did it. So, as you know, what you were saying is true. Like, you couldn't, I couldn't be taken seriously. And like
exactly.
I said before, I didn't even, if, at that you know point in my, I mean, I was young, I was attractive, and I didn't know I was attractive, and I didn't really see who I was on any level. Like, I never really had that awareness. When the people were saying that I was, you know, having sex to get my deals and stuff like that, it really hurt. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was trying so hard to be this, I was trying to come out of the childhood that I have where I was just going to, okay, just the fact that you're alive and you're not homeless or you're not dead.
Yeah. Yeah, those are big, and those are big
somebody.
Statements. Let's you know, let's be real. Those are, you know, where most people, you know, if they're smack in the matrix and in the business world, which means they're pretty much in an earlier middle lifetime, you know, this is not their last lifetime, in other words, don't even comprehend the kind of trauma you lived through to get to where you were and to do what you were doing. They don't even comprehend. To them, you know, because I've seen that. The young people, because or the young souls, let me say, the young souls don't understand trauma because, in my humble opinion, it seems to me the way the journey works is, when we come in and are in the process of scattering pieces of ourselves all over the universe, we are kicking up our heels. We are stepping on civilizations and people's toes. I mean, we are just creating total havoc without, like we're what's the word? We're set loose and we run rampant. And then in closing out, coming to the end lifetimes, maybe not just the last one, but maybe the last few, okay, well, now I've got to experience all the shit kicking I was doing coming in when, you know, I didn't feel anything. All I know is it felt great to step on that anthill, you know, shoot down that village of women, children, and men. I didn't give a shit. Let's just rock with this, you know, this you know, machine gun. It's like we don't know what the hell we're doing until we come to the end, and then we have to pick up the pieces and be the recipients of that which we just did in the other 3,500 lifetimes. I'm just grasping numbers, but in other words, oh, that's what I was doing. Holy shit. Holy shit. Clearly, humility now comes into play because there's nothing to be cocky about, you know, being destructive in somebody else's life, ending their life, whether you're ending them emotionally, financially, you know, spiritually, physically, whatever. It's like, wow, that's some serious shit, and now I know what it feels like, and all right, you know, I really do take that the stance of, do no harm, you know, to your best ability. That's why I go blackout. When I'm, after I'm finished being quantumly entangled with somebody, and I can feel it, I reach a point where it's like, I need to be just me. I need the energy inside me to just be Goldie. Well, let me just put that, just Goldie and just Mother Earth. But I don't need to call that person up and say, listen, you whack job, you know, this is how I'm, no, it's not about that at all. It's about, okay, listen, I get it. You know, you're going through your stuff. I'm going through my stuff. I'm just going to quietly but efficiently, and that's the key, efficiently untangle from your energy field by not speaking to you, not communicating with you, and not thinking about you. That, you know, it's, I don't think people understand the power of attention. and on some level you do, look how animal, look how your pets and your children, especially small children, behave when you give them attention and when you don't give them attention. I mean, hands down, you can see that it is, quote unquote, feeding them, because it is. And attention is a energetic food, and it can be abused like anything else can be abused, you know, through codependency relationships and, you know, all sorts of wiring that's run amok where, you know, I mean, I can tell you, Scott and his ex-girlfriend clearly lived on how pissed off they could make each other. They fed, each of them fed. And when I first came into his life, that was the dynamic he was having with me, because it's kind of like, well, that's where he was. So that, you know, you just keep going. And after 7-8 years, it is definitely now that there's, I don't want to do the codependency thing. You know, I'm with him for many levels that are challenging, but it's not to feed into the codependent relationship. It is for my own sovereignty, and hopefully, of course, through my experience, my being in his field, his own sovereignty will also arise from that. You know, and I say this because it's a journey that it takes awareness, it takes perseverance, it takes commitment, because these changes don't happen. They happen paradoxically in the twinkling of an eye and over a period of time. I mean, because I think in the twinkling of an eye, you recognize something, you know, like, oh, okay. But it could take you years before that change has happened cellularly and energetically inside of ourselves. And I think that's in divine order. Because I don't think the soul is in a rush. I think it's a constant flow that will just, it's almost like it's doing it to us. The soul is doing it to us. It's really about us adjusting our beliefs and our desires around our own soul to be in sync with what it's doing to us at the moment.
Yeah, that's very true. Okay, there's a couple of things you said and that triggered something.
Okay, please. You're so cute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, when you're talking about the how you don't have to, like the closure of a relationship where you disconnect, that's really a big thing, because sometimes when you walk away, I won't say you, let me put this in first person. When I've walked
you
away
rock,
from a relationship.
You rock, babe. You rock. Sorry, go ahead.
I will feel like I have failed, like I'm supposed to stay and make this right. And you're not always going to be able to make this right according to, like, the culture standards of how you have this closure in relationships, because everybody wants everything done methodically. There's times when you just know you have to go, and it may not make sense. You know, it can be a family member, a close friend, a spouse, whoever it is. You know that it's time for that relationship to dissolve, and you really don't owe anyone an explanation for that. It's really none of their business. You have to do it for yourself. That's one.
Well, and you cannot look at their reaction to your leaving as a determining factor of whether you left correctly or not, because a codependent person is going to be pissed mm-hmm. off if you take their food away. I mean, like any
right,
being is pissed off.
Right, and the onlookers also, because they're going to think that you're not
absolutely.
Being fair.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
absolutely. It's an inside job. You got to know that
exactly.
what you're doing. And the truth is, I have found it on many occasions, if the person is willing, after the blackout, you mm-hmm. can come together and dance. Because I have learned that, well, I'll be very honest with you, Patricia, right now you are my focus. I'm quantumly entangling with you. And
mm-hmm.
I've come to find that it's very important to kind of express that to people. Because, you know, if someone ever said, no, don't do that, I would I respect that. You know what I mean? Okay. But by telling them that, and I've told people that, and they're like, okay, that's cool, because, you know, they're like, well, I like your energy, Goldie, so okay, I don't know, you know, it's almost like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but that sounds like fun. But when I pull out and they go, you know, they start telling me all the changes I should make because of the kind of person I wasn't to make them happy, you know, the kind of friend I didn't show up at, I look at them and I go, I quantumly entangled with you, and it is my choice to quantumly untangle with you. If that upsets you, you should look at yourself.
Because it's easy to quantum entangle when there's no expectations, because you're free to be you. I'm free to be me. You don't put expectations on me. I don't put expectations on you. We're not
right. No,
to change
agree.
One another.
Yes.
To,
yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'll be honest with you. There is no half quantum. You know, this is what I've learned, you know, through my own shamanic journey, because this is shamanism we're talking about. The truth is,
okay,
I can't halfway quantumly entangle with you. I can't, oh, I just want to quantumly entangle with Patricia's, you know, quote-unquote, good side. You know, like,
right.
I get all of you because it's a physics, this is not a chart that I can determine. It's an all or nothing proposal. And, but like you said, you know, me and Scott have quantumly entangled, and often I would break up with him. I need a month. But here's the interesting thing that I'm learning, and the Candida is absolutely showing me this. I am learning that it is not necessarily the people in my life that I need to quantumly untangle from. It is the relationships of the ingestions. In other words, it's not just people I'm ingesting. It's the foods I'm ingesting. It's the belief systems I'm ingesting. You know, and that I have not mastered yet. That is something that I'm just becoming aware of, because I didn't even realize me and Sugar were having a relationship. I didn't know that. I just knew that's what I ate. That was my diet. But see, that's it's a paper-thin depth of what is actually happening. I am having a relationship with the entity that is Sugar, and that entity is absolutely a henchman for the Matrix. Absolutely. And so now I'm also learning the quantum entanglement. Do I want to entangle with somebody coming into this relation, into this world, into the Matrix, or do I want to quantumly entangle with somebody who's in their last lifetime? You know, not by judgment, but by choice to say, well, you know, because it seems to me it would make more sense that I would, well, see, and as soon as I'm going to say this, I get it, I'm being righteous, that I would get more from somebody like that. But you know what they say? You can, a wise man can learn from the fool. A fool can only learn from the wise man. And there's so much truth. And when I see that on Facebook all the time, you know, if people are triggering you, you know, get them out of your life. Anybody who's pulling you down, it's like, you know, there's no self-responsibility in that statement. It's like, you know, if you're attracted to somebody and they're, you know, they're shit starters, You gotta be brutally honest with yourself and say, why am I attracted to the shit starter? Because I can promise you, somewhere in your own experience, you're a shit starter.
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't think it's judgment either. You've entangled with both. You've entangled with the newbie.
I have
entangled with the elderly.
Yes.
So That's true. Yeah, you've had both, and it's just about when you come to a place where your higher self is giving you the relationship that you need at the moment. So there, even that, you don't have to feel like you're being self-righteous by saying, well, this is where I want to be. This is where you need to be right now.
Well said. No, well said. Because I mean, the truth is, I never leave a relationship screaming at somebody. You know, God knows when I was younger. And here's the interesting thing, because I have a lot of the same statistics that you do. Mm-hmm. In my 20s, up until I was 30, actually, pretty much up until I met Scott, like you, I was always the one leaving a relationship. But here's the interesting thing. Here's how I would leave a relationship. I would make them hate me so they would leave. In other words, I didn't leave the relationship. I simply could see them getting pissed and more and more pissed at me, and eventually they'd go, you know, fuck you, Goldie, I'm out. And I'd be like,
yeah,
okay.
I tried that, and that didn't work for me, because if I tried that, people wanted to help me.
I love it. No, people wanted to just get the hell away from me. But that's what I wanted, but I was not speaking that. That's what I call, from my own point of view, that is corrupted Hayoki. In other words, manipulating others instead of just being just be straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think I was candy coating. All I knew was I wanted the relationship to end, but I didn't have the courage to do it myself. Well, that's weak. Let's call a spade. That's weak.
Well, I mean, then I would be in the same situation. Just because I left doesn't mean I did it in the right way.
I'm not calling you. I'm just speaking for myself, because I just know that now. I honestly come out and, you know, I'm pretty honest going, I'm going to quantumly entangle with you. Are you okay with that? If they say yes, cool. If they say no, okay. Let me redirect my attention. And because I swear, I look at Facebook as this amazing space of, there's, you know, 12 billion people I can potentially quantumly. Because, see, quantum entanglement does not require people to be in the same physical world, same physical space.
Right. What's your energy? It's your soul.
It's an energy, and you know, even though I can tell you already that I want to meet you. I want to hug you. I want to sit with you in the same room, because I do find that, like, my relationship with Janine was 99.9% on the telephone, and when she came up here over the weekend, I had emotions rushing towards me that could not be experienced over the telephone. There is an element of being in the physical that, in my humble opinion, as I go further down my path, understand it to be a requirement. It is a requirement for an authentic relationship, not a quantum entanglement, but an authentic relationship, because one of the things I know from my own experience is the language of smell is very much a part of my diagnostics of how I diagnose my world. And you can't
smell
have that.
Smell is such a big thing to me.
Me
this
too.
My senses are very astute.
Yes, that doesn't surprise me at all.
It drives people crazy. I used to be so anal that, this will go back to like a sugar thing. So, like, I had a friend that I told you when we were talking about your, you know, sugar addiction, that she lived off Skittles and she was, you know, petite and whatever. But I mean, she just loves candy. And my senses have been so strong that there was a time, like, if somebody were to give me M&Ms and they would try to hand me a blue or red M&M, I'm like, I can't eat those. And they're like, why? They taste funny. I can't eat them. They're like, what do you mean an M&M is an M&M? And I'm like, no. A blue M&M and a red M&M that tastes like chemicals. They had a very off-putting taste to me, and so people would blindfold me and get me to put one M&M after another in my mouth, and I could tell them the color of every M&M I was eating, whether it was yellow, brown, green,
red,
blue,
and
it would freak them out. They're like, how are you doing that? I'm like, I could tell the difference.
Well, and it is your nose that you're doing that, it is, or the sense of smell that is
right.
That was doing
so
that. Right on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very, very sensitive to smell, and that attracts me or unattracts me.
Yes, exactly.
People, places, things.
Yes. Well, no, I mean, not only that, I can smell stress and fear on people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can, and I'm telling you, on all people, on Jeannie, the elderly, on the kids, I can tell when they've had a bad day. I can smell it on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are the kind of things that, because, you know, it's so funny how the Matrix will have, or forget the Matrix, I'll call it the New Age. The New Age will have us focus on, quote, unquote, our superhero qualities, you know, the X-Men qualities, you know, whether we can fly and bilocate and read people's minds. And the truth is, if you focus on those aspects, you're missing the essence of what those aspects are. Symptoms of an essence And what the essence is that they're a symptom of is the connection we have with our soul. Because the soul is so much more than the five senses, or it's the five senses on a much deeper level that, you know, like a friend of mine was telling me he plows. And when he plows, there's times when the plow will hit something on the ground, and when it hit the ground, it would make this big, loud sound. And he goes, he has, quote-unquote, bad hearing from as a kid. His ears were operated on, all sorts of stuff. He goes, but that sound is so loud. And I'm like, you're not hearing the sound through your ears. I go, your body's feeling the frequency. Because this is what our soul helps us understand, that it's our senses are not just the eye see, the nose hears, the nose smells, the ears hear. These are all frequencies that when our soul is embodied with us in the physical, our cells can see. Our cells can hear. Because these are, we're reading radio waves, or we're reading, you know, experiencing sound waves. I mean, it just comes down to that limitation. Like the sugar puts us in a nice little box, and then take away the sugar, and all of a sudden, I'm realizing joy and delight and delicious. I mean, that's one of the words that I'm re-exploring right now. The word delicious, because delicious is a word Scott in my relationship, when I came home today and he had the sign, happy birthday, hanging up, and my card, he made the card for me, the first thought I had was, oh, baby, you're so delicious. You know, because, and it's not that I want to chop a finger off and, you know, fry it in a fryer. it's a delicious experience to be surprised. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, it just, we start, you know, like where we see the words don't sugarcoat.
Right.
Well, when we take the sugar out, it's amazing how delicious life is because it is. It's who we are. This is, you don't have to focus on becoming a multisensory being. Focus on becoming whole. And that's a part
right.
of it. Focus on only those senses, and you're going to become, then you're going to lean towards the transhumanism, which is what the whole transhumanism game is about. You know, let's chip them so you think like a computer, and let's wire you up so you can leap tall buildings in a single bound. It's all artificial. It's missing the essence, and
right.
the essence is key. Yeah.
Well, when you were saying, like, you smell fear and things like that, and I don't know if I smell it. Like, I have good senses, like my taste, my smell, you know, all that's really, it functions very well. But when I'm with someone, I would just always go back to I'm an empath. As far, and I think we all are. We just don't always
pay
attention to that. But, like, I know, and I probably have said this before, I know when I'm with a child molester. I know when I'm with a child that's being molested. I can feel people's fear. I can feel their pain. I can feel different things, even with my husband. Like, if he's not with me and I get a sensation, just something in me, I get, like, my heart will beat fast, or my daughter, my son, it doesn't matter. Something that either they're stressed or they're upset or they're afraid, I'll make contact with them.
Yeah.
And it'll always shock them. Or my daughter and I, most of the time, are dialing each other at the same time.
Well, there's a DNA connection right there, too.
Yeah, but there's just certain, you know, things that I really pick up on. And I don't know that I had ever, I mean, like, when you're saying you smell it, I mean, do you literally associate a smell?
It is a smell. To be honest, it's the same smell animals smell, because animals can smell fear and stress. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. This might help you, because it would be, I would imagine, the same smell for you. It's not like it's you know, it's not a unique smell per person. It's a smell that smells like what I would call stale Budweiser beer. That's
what
the stress
and, what does
and
that
fear.
To you?
That's how I would interpret the smell.
Okay, I have, and this is weird because it's the man that raped me when I was 15, he had a distinctive smell.
Okay.
And I never actually, until you just said the beer, it was like a man's smell, not an armpit odor smell, but like a man's
it's not
smell
armpit,
with a
no.
back drop of beer.
Yes.
Okay, when I'm around somebody, like, and I have said to David, very rarely, but on some occasions, if he would approach me and say, oh, like, I would push him back for a minute because that smell would take me back to that particular person.
It would
person.
Trigger you, right.
It would trigger me, but I get that around, I get that with certain people, and it makes me stop right where I am.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, and like I said, at first I used to think, of course, that it only happened around people who drank, you know, because I'm assuming it's the beer.
But I could smell it on my kids.
I know my kids aren't drinking beer. I mean, you know, my nanny kids, clearly they're not.
But,
and that's when it,
and
I forgot
husband's
where
not
I heard it.
Pardon? And now I'm saying
what?
It's not
no, exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm saying it's nothing like that, but there's something that in that moment with whoever it is that I will, I could be out of the crowd and I'll pick it up.
Exactly. I can as well. And to be honest with you, animals can, wild
mm-hmm.
as well as domesticated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially, I'll be honest with you, I'm starting to come to understand, I believe, you know, once we remove the stoppers, the blocks, everybody can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what you were saying.
There was something I wanted to make sure that I said this too, because you were talking about animals earlier, about
okay.
the energy, like, you know, how they want our attention. And
yes.
this was so,
yes.
this is something I, because you're really good with this, and this is something I'm clueless about, but for example, you were talking about how, like, your toddlers and the animals will want the attention the same as anyone else. When I get on the telephone or when I'm doing something, my animals act just like a child. And when a child would come and nag, like, tug on your shirt or your pants and say, hold me, or they want your attention, my animals will do the same. If
yes.
I get on the phone or I'm interacting, or at bedtime in my room, I've got a picture over my nightstand of the ocean and a
yes.
lighthouse. And I've got a cat that he never touches that any time during the day, but at night, if we go to bed, he will come in there and he will stretch as far as he can and just scratch on that picture, or he will paw the door until he closes the door. Like, he does whatever he can, like, to get our attention. And so, like, that was so, you know, huge to me. I'm like, what is it that when you're laying down or when you're communicating with someone on the phone, like, I could be sitting here talking to my husband and we're just having a conversation, it's not a big deal, but I get on the telephone or we're in the bed and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. They're trying to take pictures down, close doors, they're throwing things off the counters. I mean,
right. Well, what it is,
what
I mean,
is
it's
that?
Essentially, it's a feeding, because the way I see it is, most of us, first of all, the animals, definitely, especially the domestic animals, they
mm-hmm.
tend to adapt our, what I call, wiring. And
mm-hmm.
our wiring was based on our parents, and pretty much our parents, because the first 7 years, the most influence usually most people have is our parents. Even if they're not there, there's still an influence. So essentially
mm-hmm.
what the wiring is we are conditioned to feed. How do we receive love? We have to be approved by somebody to get love. You know, it's all about the how do I put it? We feed out, because unless we're, you know, with a conscious parent, we're not told, oh, listen, you know, all love should come from within. Nobody's telling us that. They're all telling us, I'll love you if you start behaving better. I'll show you
right.
love when you do it my way. You know, the parents
right.
have all these rules. You're going to respect me. You know, it's not about earning that respect. You're going to do it because I'm your parent, and then if you do it, then I'll love you. And as a nanny, I've clearly witnessed this throughout the whole income status and ethnics, you know, everybody. That's how we raise our kids. It's as simple as that. So what ends up happening is, see, it's like with you, what you're doing right now is the soul work is literally about unplugging or taking the cord that's plugged into the outside world, unplugging it, and literally turning the cord like underneath you and sticking that back into your own field. The minute you become self-aware and self-responsible, the minute we don't allow blame, shame, and guilt to choose our behaviors, because I can't blame you, it's my feeling, I'm responsible. I'm not ashamed of what I've done because I'm not letting you determine whether I have, you know, integrity or I don't have integrity. You know, everything is turned inside, but the animals have it, as you master that, turning it inside, they'll reestablish and master it. But there's a time for, you know, there's a time lag between the twinkling of the eye and mastery. Because I definitely see, like, I basically spend 5 days a week at Scott's and 2 days at my parents'. In the beginning, you know, I was like, you know, my father's like, your cat's going crazy, she misses you, you got to get here. And I'm realizing that it's very important for me, because it's ironic, when I'm at Scott's, I do a lot of my solo work. You know, Scott does his own thing. Most of the time, we're not together. We're in the house at the same time, but we're not together. I'm doing my soul work when I'm here. And I began to talk to Keeney about this, going, babe, I know, because she was a rescue cat. And I swore to her that I would never, ever abandon her. And I let her know, I have not abandoned you. You know, you're at this house, nobody will abuse you, there'll always be food, there'll always be shelter, there'll always be the litter box, even though she never uses it. and I'm telling her, it's like, listen, this is about a time for you, and I've literally verbalized this to her. Rewire yourself, Dakini, because, like, the doorbell will ring and she'll run under the bed. And I'm like, you don't have to be afraid. You have to be sovereign. But what is she showing me? That there's still work for me to do in my own energy field. Because I can tell you, I was scared out of my mind letting go of sugar. But I'm learning, of course, that now that my soul wants me to do it, okay, well, now there's no turning back from this fear. And I can tell you, I've thought about it, like, you know, Scott said to me, he goes, last night, he goes, you can't eat pizza, right? And I'm like, no. You know, and then I ran through my head, it was like, what, you're never going to have pizza again? I mean, are you actually going to? And it's like, listen, I'm going to kill the candida, I'm going to get rid of it, and then I'm going to modify through medium. I'm not going to eat the way I used to eat, which will allow me if I want, because I'm not doing this from an anal perception of I must be perfect. I want the candida out of my body, so I'm definitely rigid right now because I want that out of my body. But once I get my yeast in balance, it's like I can have pizza one night. You know, I think the thing that I'll ignore that for now. Don't worry about it. Just so you know, in the chat room, 90 seconds, we're going to go off the air, but we're going to go a little over. So if you want to call in and listen to the rest of the show, you can. If not, we'll be archived within minutes of us hanging up. So thank you guys for being here. I super appreciate it. And everybody else who's out there who I don't know, you're here. Thank you so much for being here. Shit. What the hell was I talking about?
You were talking about the fact that Scott was asking you if you were not going to ever eat pizza, or you were asking yourself if you would never
eat pizza. Oh, right, about never eating foods again, because I really am getting it that, you know, listen, this is not about I can never eat carbs and sugar again. If anything, I will never have a diet where on several days in a row I'm eating cookies, you know, Twinkies, Ring Dings, donuts. Those days are done. And of course, so for now, I got to swing the pendulum to the extreme that I don't have any of it. But once I'm in balance, the key for me will be moderation. And the truth is, the choice I have right now is I'm rewiring myself to not even seek that kind of, I don't need that sweetness. I need soul sweetness.
Right, and it's not something that can rule you anymore, because that's the biggest thing. Like,
exactly.
You know, David and I have the same battle, because if I give up something, it puts him in defense mode to where he feels like, oh, well, you're giving it up. So he starts looking at himself like there's something inferior about him. If I give it up, he's got to do it. And,
right.
And I always say, it's not about you, it's about me. So I have to do what makes me feel good, what's, you know, healthy for my body, and what I know is, you know, good for, you know, the journey that I'm on. So if I'm not going to ever not drink. It's not going to be that I'm never going to drink alcohol. It's not going to be that I'm never going to have pizza or, you know, whatever. It's going to be that it's not going to control me. It's not going to dictate
exactly. That's
how
a great
I live
way
my
to
life.
Share. Yes, exactly. Because I'm like, there's no way I'm going to go the rest of my life. I know me. It's like, but like I said, but I am on the quest right now to, I want to be candida free. That is my quest. So it might be 6 to 8 months, which makes sense.
Right.
It was 49 years of abuse. The least I could give my body is 6 to 8 months to recover.
Right.
I mean, come on. That's the least you could do. but again, these are the thoughts that I'm through contemplation working through, and I'm very comfortable with these thoughts going, okay, you know, be vigilant now and play with, you know, because here's the key. As I become in tune with my body, I'll never let go of that. Not, you know, in other words, if I start getting where I'm eating too much sugar, my body's going to tell me early, because I'm going to set it up that it does. I want to know if I'm eating too much. It's like, what are you avoiding, Goldie? You know, I'll start having blackouts with food. I've never had blackouts with food until today. And I'm like, but that's a very – see, again, there's that it's the metaphor. I've blacked out people. I'm learning now how to black out food and then come back. And there's the relationship's at a new space because of I went on blackout and contemplated my relationship with it. You know, that,
right.
You can't ask for anything more. That's self-diagnosed. That's self-soul searching. And in my humble opinion, that's self-empowering. Truly
right. Well,
self-empowering.
We did the Atkins diet years ago. We were cutting out carbs and sugars, and we did it strictly for the purpose of losing weight. And we lost 30 pounds in a month because we were totally on the weight lost part, but it also regulates everything else in your body. But I just wanted to share this with you. A friend of mine that lives in South Africa, she had been diagnosed with her pancreas being 90% dead, her liver failing, her kidneys failing, basically, you know, a diabetic that could go into a coma. And she struggled with it, trying to eat just, you know, like natural, organic, taking supplements and, you know, creating different things that she could take naturally to heal, and nothing had really helped her other than she started grounding. Her husband created an earthen mat for her, and she decided to cut out the carbs and sugar. And she was gaining an incredible amount of weight because of her body shutting down. It wasn't because she was overeating. She was actually kept a kosher diet most of her life and was a real healthy organic eater. But it didn't matter. It was the sugars and the carbs and the lack of connecting to Mother Earth. When she started grounding, and she's actually an atheist, and she doesn't take on the concept of Mother Earth, but she definitely
is in
the mindset of energy and connected to the energy, which is funny. But so anyway, she she does ground, and she started doing the cutting the sugars and carbs out, and like within the first week she lost weight, and for 5 years she's done nothing but gain weight daily.
Right. Right.
And her weight, her being worried about weight loss is not because of her being vain. It's because she's so overweight, that her legs are, she can't hardly walk.
It's a medical issue. It's a medical
issue.
Yeah,
it's completely medical.
Well, I'll be honest with you. The candida became a medical issue for me in that, you know, I mean, well, it's funny. In all my exploration of candida, you know, the symptoms are, you know, patches of eczema, dizziness, concentration issues, low or no sex drive. That one I found very interesting because I thought it was menopause. Headaches. And what's so interesting is the things that I've read on candida say that most people will treat the symptoms but not the candida. And I laugh because knowing how I felt about, you know, knowing how most of us feel, at least in America, to say that we're going to remove sugar and carbs from our lives, you know, shoot me now. Who are you kidding? Everything has sugar and carbs in it. I mean, really, that's what I tell you. I haven't eliminated it completely. I'm still eating carbs and sugar. It's just, you know, now I'm eating things made of rice and not wheat or, you know, but, you know, hold on. Excuse me, Scott. I'm still on the air, babe. Scott is belching away in the background. Okay, that's good. That's good. It was two very loud ones. So what I understand that as, and I love that you say that, you know, she was doing the earthing stuff, because I knew when I started on the earthing products, and I didn't know how, but I knew, I go, this will change my life. Having Mother Earth actually in the house with me, helping me undo all the electricity frequencies that are tying my body in knots and with the inflammation. And the funny part is, yes, I definitely feel better. But the truth is, it became an awareness for me that the sugar is the connection to the artificial light. And I know that's not my journey. My journey is the organic journey with Mother Earth, and I now have the strength and confidence that I can do the journey of no sugar and no carbs. And again, not for a lifetime, long enough to get the candida out, and then I can do it in balance, which, like everything else, if you do it in moderation, I think you can have yourself a grand old time. That's fine. The body has incredible resiliency. It will recover from small amounts of these things. But if you bombard yourself, inevitably, you know, the body goes, hey, you know, I'm done. And it really was for me. It was a medical issue of all these symptoms, and I went, okay, shit, Goldie, are you ready to feel better now? I mean, really, are you ready to feel better? And I was like, I am. And not just feel better, feel more. Yeah. Feel more of everything, which is very exciting to me. Very exciting.
Well, it's like when you say to me you want to meet, right?
Yeah.
And like, we've got to have the face-to-face. And immediately, and I told you this when we did the last show, I was like, you're the first appointment that I've kept in years.
Aw.
And
I'm so glad.
but there really is a real connection between you and I. And when somebody normally says they want to meet, I'm usually just like, no way. I don't want that in my life. I don't want that. Intimacy thing again, because I'm always running from that intimacy. You know, how you wanted to meet, whatever. And he was like, hey, we'll do a road trip. We'll go see her. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, we'll go see you. we'll come see you.
Yeah, that would be awesome, too. Wow, I didn't even however it is, you know, it will be divine. And listen, by no means.
But that's a big deal.
That's a big deal for me. Yeah, right on. Okay. No, right. Well, because it helped me understand, like I said, I had a 3-year relationship with Janine, and, you know, after all that, the wildness and the extremeness, when she came up, I just had, it filled in all the gaps that I didn't understand. And And I think, like you were saying, that's part of intimacy is, mm-hmm. you know, seeing a whole person, you know, smelling mm-hmm. them. Having a hug with them, having a cry with them, laughing our asses off with each other, peeing our mm-hmm. pants because we're laughing so hard or right. because we coughed. You know, God knows I'm at the age where shit, all I have to do is cough and I pee my pants.
But
I mean,
but
I would, you know, I love that. See, everything that I learned from my relationship with Janine, I can bring into our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, and I think that's the journey of the soul, that we take these things, we bring them into ourselves, and then we go out there and we express them again. You know, it's like it really is as simple as that, and as glorious as that, and as adventurous as that. You know, it's I'm not afraid of these things, and I'm not afraid because, like I said, anything I get myself into, I can get myself out of. I'm gonna end tonight, and I want you to have also a closing statement. My closing statement for tonight, for today's show, is to always understand that commit yourself 100% to any decision you make. Commit to it 100% because recognize at any given moment you can change that decision. And commit completely to the other side of that, the complete opposite. Just because you commit to something 100% doesn't mean you're locked into it and you can't get out of it. You're not being out of integrity to change your mind. But what happens when we commit 100% is the soul gets the experience. And I truly believe once the soul gets the experience, it's more than happy to go, okay, let's move on to the next experience. And this applies to the things we enjoy as much as the things that bring us pain. So you got to be willing to just continually move on from both. And that's my wrap up. Patricia, can you share a closing statement?
I didn't write my speech.
No, and I don't mean to put you on. No, if you don't, you can just say, "Hey, it's been great. Bye."
Well, no, the only thing that I would say in ending today is that you know, every day I'm learning something new about myself, about my experiences, about you know, just what my journey is about. Every single day is a learning process, and I'm so open to it now that every day to me is amazing because of the awareness that just keeps, you know, coming up regularly now. And I would just say for everyone, you know, don't be hard on yourself. You planned your journey here. Your higher self is always in control. Your free will does exist, you know, from your higher self, and what you have here, what you're doing here, you really don't have control of. You are experiencing it. So don't judge yourself. Don't be so hard on yourself. Just embrace the experiences. You know, just be thankful that you're aware that you're here to experience and really enjoy the experiences and learn from the experiences.
Right on. Okay, one more question, and then I'll close. Will you do another show with me? Can we plan another one just because we're planning another one? Yay!
Yeah.
Outstanding, Patricia.
Yeah,
all
when
right,
you started
so,
talking about the twinkling of an eye, it brought up something we talked about, and I was like, oh, yeah, I want to talk about that sometime.
Oh, perfect. Okay, yes. And we'll talk privately, so I'll let you guys know. I'll definitely post it on Facebook when me and Patricia will do another show. And just so everybody knows, April 1st, 11 a.m., which is a Tuesday, April Fool's Day, Janine will be coming on, and we're going to discuss all the changes we went through from the last show that we did with Mystical Mother Earth until that day. So I invite you guys to join me then. And, you know, just keep checking out my Facebook wall. I'll definitely let you know when me and Patricia are doing another show. I'm so glad you're in my life, Patricia. You just make me happy.
Thank you. I'm glad you're in mine, too. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. And listen, thank you everybody who joined us today. Your energy is exquisite, live or archived. Time and space, not relevant. The fact that we're all kind of quantumly entangling with each other, that's what's relevant. And I appreciate all of you. I appreciate you tremendously, Patricia. Truly, you're your shares are, they just bring me great, great joy. I love what you bring. You're a natural for the radio, just a natural, truly.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate everything that you've brought into my life and for the inspiration that you've given me, and you just don't know how much you've really helped me be able to open up. I really don't think I would have opened up like this had you not crossed my path, so
it is my pleasure. Oh, you're very, very, very welcome. So I'm going to end the show with a song that's very apropos, and everybody have an amazing February 25th. There's a lot to be grateful for. You know, you just got to go and dig deep and find it. All right, guys, I love you all, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Bye!